And here yet again with Roland Grappo of the band Master Plan. Roland, it's great to have you on the show yet again. And let's talk about what does Master Plan currently have going on and talk about the current happenings of you and, of course, the band.
Yeah, so I just finished a couple of productions like Lords of Black and Kilmara. And I started already with the next band called Black Majesty. I'm thinking I'm doing the number or the fourth album already. And yeah, so we have a lot of festivals this year going on with Master Plan, or some small touring in Spain. And yeah, I got just more offers yesterday. Another festival from Spain. It was a call from our promoter, and also basically it was our ex-promoter. And now today I got a question about some little touring in Italy. So it's funny. There's something going on all the time with Master Plan, and new album. That's the only problem. So I started or will start this month with a songwriting we did already 2 years ago. We had 3-4 songs ideas, maybe I told you already last time, and so we were basically a bit lazy with that. So mm-hmm. But I hope we get the album done, the next normal studio album, till October. That's what I really hope, because it's time.
Well, you know, one of the things that obviously we've talked about over the years and for quite a long time is Andy Sneap was a huge inspiration for you as a producer, and you've become a record producer. You've taken a lot of what Andy has taught you and other people have taught you over the years and really have started putting out some really great records. And then, you know, now Andy has produced a really killer album, the new Judas Priest album entitled Firepower. And, you know, what's your opinion of it? What do you think of his production on that? Because I think it's very good, and I know you are a fan of Andy's, and, you know, talk about that and talk about what you think about it.
Yeah, as I know Andy, everything sounds basically just great. You know, I'm a big fan of him, and the last album I was, you know, there's always one reference album of him for a certain time. You know, some years ago was Megadeth, Endgame. Now I liked I'm on a Mars. I forgot the album title. I think I have it here, like the reference. It's some juggling, some funny name here. I don't know, some Scandinavian name, and but I think the next reference album will be Judas Priest for sure. So I still don't have it. I ordered it. It's pretty late. I hope it's not lost somehow. But I still love my CDs to buy. And yeah, I think what I heard on the internet or on YouTube was brilliant. And yeah. I the funny thing is I wanted to meet Andy Sneap in March again, and we talked about it like 3-4 months ago, and then I said, so when should I come? I would like to book the flights now. He said, there's something I have to tell you. So he told me that the news before it was even official that he has to play with Judas Priest, and I said, no, come on. I can't believe it, you know. So it was a sad news because of Glenn Tipton, and great news for him, but that's amazing that everything changed so fast and so drastic. But you see, it's really great that they're touring now, and Glenn Tipton was joining them on stage yesterday. It was amazing.
Well, and it's really great to be able to see Glenn go out there and go on stage with him. And it's really sad at the same time, knowing what disease that he has, that he's got Parkinson's. And I mean, you know, it's a sign that, you know, a lot of these icons and a lot of these great musicians aren't going to be around forever making albums.
No. I feel like it's not even funny anymore. It's like my idols, many are gone already. And mostly you can say when I was young, my idols were like around 10 years old or something. Some younger even, like let's say Eddie Van Halen or Michael Schenker, so it's just 5 years older or 6 or 4 years older than me, you know. And but you see, Glenn Tipton is I think 70 now, and or let's say Richie Blackmore is now 70, maybe 3 already, I don't know. So this generation is getting less and less, and I'm worried that, you know, that the next one is our generation. Mm-hmm. I'm already end of 50, so that means let's see how long we can produce and do this kind of business, you know. I mean, it's great that Priest is still so big, and I saw them when I think 81 or 82 in Hamburg first time, and it changed totally my life, you know. I was a musician already, and I started Rampage with my friend at that time, and we heard Judas Priest and then Saxon, and these two bands were the new wave of heavy metal for us, you know. So that was the beginning of the 80s. And, you know, at the same time, I was still listening to other music, totally different music, you know, like the 70s stuff, like Deep Purple or Kansas, Journey, Styx, Foreigner, and all these kind of bands as well. But you see how big they are now, and this is amazing, and I'm really happy for that, you know. But you see, it's scary as well that we are the next generation, I guess. And I think, I don't want to mention this my old band again, but you see how successful Halloween is now, you know. Mm-hmm. It's also, that's the age thing. The generation grew up with this music. They're also not young anymore, so, but they're appreciating that they can see something which came back, like a reunion or something like big, or Farewell touring. You know, it's so famous to say Farewell tour, like Scorpions did 6 years ago,
right?
And they're still touring and laughing even now about it. But you know, but this is the kind of thing. Many bands doing it, you know, and I'm thinking about this as well. So how old I want to be to stay on stage. So I don't want to be so fragile looking and weak and thinking I have to be on stage just to get some, you know, some beers for free and some money and to survive. So that's not my kind of thinking, you know, because many of our idols, like Elvis or like the other guys, you know, Jimi Hendrix, they died very young, you know. So normally you don't see your idols dying when they're 80s and still on stage performing, you know. This is just really strange, but I think that's the kind of generation we have now. They're not stopping, they're not even thinking about it, you know, except they're getting sick or dying.
Now, you know, it's awesome that, you know, a band like Judas Priest and some of these bigger bands, they usually don't want to get a good producer. They want to do everything themselves, and the albums never really sound that good. And Priest decided to not do that. They decided to go with Andy Sneap, who made probably the best sounding album Judas Priest has had in years. And, you know, bands like Iron Maiden really should take note, because they need to start doing that as well.
Good example. Good example. I think Judas Priest was always, for the time, I think, if, to be honest, they had always a good sound. You know, in the 80s, they sounded great. I mean, Painkiller, when Painkiller came out, at that time, everybody was just thinking, oh my God, this drum sound, this guitar sound. Now it's old sounding, you know, compared to what Andy did now. I think the new album, Firepower, is amazing, and they made the right move. I think it's, especially when you want to achieve still, I don't know if it's the last album, but if it's the last album, it's a brilliant album, you know, from the sound, from the production, from the songwriting, what I heard so far is great. He's singing amazing, so it doesn't matter what is live, but what I heard live is great as well, you know. It's like the team they choose, like Mike Exeter, Tom Allum is the name, right? Mm-hmm. And Andy Sneap together. I think it was brilliant, because they had some old guy who knew the roots, and Mike was working on the last couple of albums, and maybe they could even ask my friend Roy Z, because he worked with them as well. But I don't know why, you know. But anyway, but Andy was the guy who made the sound, I think, so brilliant and modern. And that was a good move.
Keeping a job in the music industry, making a living off of it, is a very, very tough thing to do, especially nowadays. And you also, besides being a musician, you've also become a record producer, and you've been doing pretty well at that. And what made you decide to want to really get into production? Because I know when you and I first started to get to know each other, you weren't as much into that as you are now. But obviously, over the years, you've been inspired to become a record producer, and you've done very well at it. So with that said, you know, who were some of the people that really helped you out in the beginning and inspired you to become a producer? And, you know, why did you decide that you wanted to do this to begin with?
The funny thing is that I was never really interested in the beginning. You know, when I was a guitar player, I was just into guitar sound. I tried to get the best sound I always was trying to achieve, especially with my combination I use in Halloween, the Stratocaster, my old Marshalls, some pedals. I was a big Yngwie fan, but I wanted to have a better sound. I wanted this Blackmore sounds, you know, from the 70s, this kind of made in Japan, or, you know, this Machine Head sound, which I still love a lot, you know. And other guitar players I really liked the sound was Brian May. So I think I was really into sounds, you know, and there are some brilliant players, but some of them, they don't have a good sound, and then I'm not so impressed. So I think the combination is always important. If Brian May, you hear one tone and you know it's him, you know, because of the guitar sound. And that's maybe how it started, somehow hidden. And I remember when I had a big stereo system in at home, before I even was on Halloween, I remember. And I was fooling around with the equalizer, and the album I heard was just brilliant sounding already. But I tried to improve it somehow for my home system, and maybe that's how it started in a deep way, you know. And the band was Rush, you know. Tom Sawyer was listening, and I was like, wow, this bass sound, the drum sound. And this was already brilliant production at that time. And then many years I was just playing guitar, didn't even pay attention in the studio. And I really regret it now, because I was working with so many great guys like Chris Sangaridis, with Michael Wagner, Michael Tibis, who was an engineer always on many albums. And then slowly on the end, you know, I was thinking, okay, I bought a lot of equipment when I did my solo album, my first one. So I was still a couple of years in Halloween, and most of the stuff I still have. So, and some people advised me, like Michael Tibis, and he said, you have to have this. This is important. This is really good, like classic Neve equipment, you know, preamps or Massenburg EQ. I still have this stuff, and I bought it 20 years already ago. But at that time, I didn't know what to do with that. So basically, when we started the first Masterplan album, when we did the Dark Ride album with Roy Z, I was more interested. Because I love the guitar sound. I think that changed, everything changed there slowly. I was a little bit more following, but then when I heard Andy's Neve production and I wanted a new producer for the first Masterplan album, I just watched him, what he did. And then since then, we are friends, and I'm always ask him, or I was visiting him, I think, 7-8 times already in England, just, you know, for longer weekends to get the newest kind of production tips. And then 10-11 years ago, AFM Records said, why are you not producing other bands, you know, because Masterplan, I was asking for money or something. This is how it really started. Then I said, okay, I had the equipment, I had a home studio which was just for Masterplan. But then I said, okay, why not recording other bands? So that's how it started. And, you know, I think it needs a lot of experience to be better and more in the first league to play, you know. I'm still not there, but I'm on the way, I hope.
I think you're well on your way.
You know, that's you need to be really interested. I think I have the same energy into this production and learning this stuff, like I put the energy to learning my guitar, you know. I don't think I have big talent, it's just hard work. Mm-hmm. So that's how I see myself, you know. You have to work, you have to fail, you have to make mistakes, and just keep your ears open and try to learn from everyone. It's not just Andy. I learned also from Jens Borgren, and reading interviews of him or interviews of people who met him. And of course, I tried these kind of tricks he's telling, and you know, and all these other guys on the internet you can find. Nowadays, it's easier to learn stuff, you know.
Right.
But that's how it is, you know. You should try, and you should think after the production you did and think, this is what's the best I ever did. Maybe then after 3 months later you say, oh, why did I do that, you know. So you have to learn and try everything, and also by errors you get better, you know.
Right.
I think it's the same with the songwriting, it's the same with the guitar playing or singing, same.
You know, you were a huge fan of Stratocasters when you and I first started talking. And, you know, what ended up happening was then you started playing more Gibson stuff. And, you know, Gibson obviously is struggling. Everybody knows that. What is your opinion of that company? And why do you think that they were struggling and, you know, possibly going bankrupt?
I just I heard some rumor about it like some weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really follow what's happening because, you know, I totally lost a bit interest in this, you know, guitar kind of thing, you know. I have my guitars are kind of vintage. My black main Les Paul, which I use basically just in the studio since the last 10 years. People still can see pictures from the first touring with Jorn and I think I used it just 3 years, 4 years, and then I had fear to lose it because it sounded so great. So it's basically the same guitar like John Sykes is using. It's the same year, 77, 78, 76, mm-hmm. You know, and it has a maple neck, and I never liked mahogany. And the same has my live guitar, which I'm using now. That's the only guitar I take on tour mostly because I don't have a spare guitar.
Right.
And this one is maple, also fretboard, and it's a bit brighter sounding. So if I'm honest, these guitars sounded like the biggest, fattest Fender Stratocasters, you know, because they have a really trebly sound and a very fast attack. I can play quite fast. I'm not playing the same style like on my Fender Stratocasters because I don't like to play, let's say, arpeggios on it, you know. So I'm more rocking, I'm more old school playing there. But I love the sound. And the funny thing is, in the studio, let's say on the last album, Pumpkins, all the solo parts are all Fender Stratocasters. So I'm only for the rhythm guitar I'm using Gibson. So live, of course, just a Gibson, but in the studio I still go back to use my Stratocasters because I love this solo sound, because I'm always, especially when I did Pumpkins, I wanted to sound more or less like I did in the 90s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And bit more modern update because of the recording technique or whatever. So, but sometimes people doesn't realize. They say, "Well, you don't use these guitars anymore." I said, "I'm using it, but you don't know about it."
Right.
And they don't hear the difference. I think it's just my sound of the fingers. I don't know. It seems like it's my sound, how I play. And but I love still both sides. I love Gibson and I love Fender the most. For me, it's black and white. You know, all this stuff between, like, let's call it like Japanese guitars or BC Rich or whatever. These are great guitars for other guys, but not for me.
I'm going to go to the subject of the Halloween reunion, because back about a year ago, there was an article that came out where you said that you were not asked to be a part of the reunion. And everybody took that as, oh my God, Roland is angry and bitter over this whole situation, that he was not asked to be a part of this thing. And really, that's not what the case was. But, you know, a lot of people online and on the media and on the internet were trying to almost start this media war between you and that band. And I know for a fact that you were not bitter about them doing a reunion without you. You just basically, you know, to me, you were just like, hey, I'm going to go about my business. I'm going to keep producing bands. And, you know, let's face it, you're in a completely different place than you were, say, when you were in that band. You know, musically, you're in a different place. You're producing all these bands and stuff like that. And you're not as keen to go on the road as you used to be. And you know, to me, you never came off as bitter when you talked about it. You just basically told everybody that you were, and it has to be part of it. And everybody took that as you being angry. And even I've had people that have tried to bait me into saying something. So really, you were just never bitter about the whole thing, and you weren't angry about it. You know, they went on a reunion, and that was it to you. And, you know, everybody tried to make it out as if you were. And I know for a fact that you weren't, and that everything with you and that band is far in the past now.
Yeah, there were a couple of fans writing me, and they even met or saw the show without me, and they said they missed me, especially South America, blah, blah, blah. And then they started to write me big letters, and I said, like, okay, I answered once, and it was nice, you know, and I said, you know. But then, especially media, you can say whatever you will. I think if you're too positive, then they think, okay, I still believe he's bitter. He's not in the feeling good about that, because they put themselves with their fantasy, with their own personality in this kind of situation. They think I am, because they don't know what I'm doing. Because I'm really happy. I have a beautiful wife. I have a dog. I have a studio, big house, you know, and I'm healthy so far, as I know. So, and that's the main stuff, you know. And mm-hmm. Surviving means I can live. I'm not rich, and you know. But I love my. I have a lot of passion for music still. I love my job. My job is music producer more than a guitar player nowadays. And that's what I love. And of course. You know, sometimes you meet fans, I wanted to tell you before, but especially, it doesn't matter which country, but they, you know, you talk with fans and then they say, yeah, some friends of mine, they say, you are really arrogant, and I don't think you're arrogant. I said, why they think I am arrogant? They don't even know me. Mm-hmm. Maybe because of some interviews which you do, and then I feel sad because... Why you give interviews when you say something and try to be positive and they still think you're negative?
Right.
You know, I don't understand this. This is so unfair to my personality because I'm not negative. I don't think I am frustrated. I don't think I am a bad person at all. You know, it's just why some fans know everything better.
Right.
You know, it's just because they're a bit more fan of the other member, or which is okay. You know, you don't need to have the same sympathy for everyone, but it's not fair to say this guy is bad because or negative because
right.
he looks strange or something or has a fat ass or something. You know, it's like. There's no respect anymore, especially on this kind of internet or, you know, media, social media kind of time, how you call it,
right.
because I'm still old school, you know, and so I grew up in the 70s, my idols came from the 60s, which was a hippie era. Everybody had long hair, everybody was cool,
yeah.
and we had just the best music we could have, you know, and so we never talked bad about other people, you know, we just... I had so many bands I liked, and I loved all these guys. You know, I never said this guy is better because he's cooler, mm-hmm. or something he said in interviews. You know, there was a funny interview of one of my idols, Michael Schenker, and he did it in his 70s. And he said one guy was, I think it was a guitar magazine already, and he asked him, "How you do your guitar sound?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm using a guitar and a Marshall amp, and I'm not telling you anything. This is top secret." So when I read it, I was fucking... Of course, I was interested how he's doing it, you know? And I was like, he's so arrogant. But I think Mikey Schenker is special. I love this guy, you know? And so he was hiding it, and somehow... But I don't think there was a big secret anyway. It's just... You know, he didn't want that people copying him, and
right.
I think he was right. You know, but you see, that's the kind of interviews which I still remember. But you know, it was more funny now than I would think he's arrogant. You know, or something like that. But that's how it is. I think people should be more relaxed about everything. It's just a community, especially when you go to rock or metal concerts or these festivals, you see just people enjoying, and they all enjoy and love it. But sometimes when they're sitting at home on the internet writing or, you know, talking with friends, they're so negative, you know, talking. I don't understand that. I don't think none of us, let's say, musicians or idols for these people wants that situation. So I think we want just calm, everything easy, everything happy. Calm down, people. Don't drink. Don't take drugs. No, I'm joking.
But, you know, as I said before, you know, when this whole reunion thing was announced, you just basically were like, well, you know, that's awesome for them. And you know, I'm just going to go make another record. And that's pretty much what the conversation was.
I think I forgot about it already. You see, I'm not really living in the past and analyzing what I did or, you know, something. But I think at that time, when we did the Pumpkins album, they all thought it's kind of revenge or something. Now I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just a relaxing situation. It's just I took my songs and I put it in a new costume with new band members. That's it. I forgot about it already. You know, the only difference is... We played The Chance the last 3-4 years already. So there was even before when we did the album. Mm-hmm. And in Moscow when we played last time, we played the first time Time of the Oath, and it was just unbelievable. The fans loved it, and the band loved it, because it's a bit different than this Masterplan style, but still fits very well. And for me, it was like a bit deja vu, you know? So it was a great feeling. Somehow you see this high life kind of situation, you know, from the DVD from the 90s. And you have less people in front of you, but you see happy people, and they were acting like the same time, same kind of, you know, raising their hands on the right rhythm and singing along with us, and it was cool, you know. I think that's when they realized we did the album. They were talking too much about revenge, and I was sad. I did this just to give them bad feelings, and I never had this in my mind, you know.
Right.
Just a bit coincidence, because I delayed this album for 2 years or something, and then it came out at the same part or time when the reunion tour came. So,
you know, you and I, we talk about once a year, and, you know, we talk about, you know, I have you on a show about once a year. It's typically what happens. And you know, I remember about 3 years ago, you talked about possibly doing a record of, you know, some re-recordings of some of the old Halloween songs that you did. And this was before any reunion or anything was announced. And then, of course, the timing of you recording it and doing the release coincided with the reunion. And everybody thought you were trying to really get back at them. But I understand why you did what you did, because even a couple of those tracks were old Rampage songs that were recorded for Halloween. And then, of course, now you're recording them again. And I'm talking of Music and Step Out of Hell, for example. And, you know, since we're on the subject, why did you decide that you wanted to re-record some of these tracks? And I don't think I ever really asked you why you wanted to do that, and maybe explain why you wanted to re-record these.
Yeah. Now, I see myself, you know, like a little bit comparing it like Uli John Ross or Michael Schenker, because they played in many different bands and they all still play the old songs, you know. It's like, why not? I mean, it's not even only these guys, it's also, let's say, Kai Hansen. He always played I Want Out. It was Gamma Ray and Unisonic and. So I just tried the same and to get my babies back a little bit, you know, and to pick some of the songs out. I don't want to play all of these songs, but especially the stuff I wrote for Rampage, you know, like Music and Step Out of Hell. And I love these songs, but it's really like a history part of me, you know. I'm not the guy who wants to play one song for 50 years, you know. Okay, if it's Bohemian Rhapsody or something, like a million, or like Final Countdown or like Europe, then you have to play it. But if it's not necessary, why should I do it, you know? I want to be fresh, feeling. I'm still not tired about playing the Masterplan songs from 2003 and 2005. I love this stuff, you know. And basically, I'm not listening so much about it. So only when we play it, then I hear it, you know, or when I rehearse it before the tour.
Right.
So it's like a cool, fresh feeling still, and I'm still amazed what great stuff I wrote there, you know, with my, you know, with Uli together and Jorn. And so, or Mike DeMeo later, you know, we play also parts and from the last album. And then, so it's like just to get the babies home and feeling it like, okay, now I feel free. I don't have to think about it anymore.
Right.
And I'm not thinking about it anymore. So for me, it's gone. It's out. It's out of the window. If I want to play something, I can say, okay, there's a logo called Masterplan on. I can play it. Why not? But I don't have to. So after the next album, maybe we play just one song, maybe none of them. Who knows? But now in Spain, we want to play maybe in May, we have a little tour. We play maybe 2-3 songs from that. So just, you know, because we had this funny idea with a promoter to call it Pumpkins for Tapas or something, you know, to make something special for the Spanish fans.
You know, when I listen to the Pumpkins album and I listen to some of the re-recorded Halloween songs, you know, sometimes you don't know what to expect. And I'll be honest with you, what was really funny is the one song I really loved the most, and everybody thought I was crazy, was your re-recorded version of Take Me Home.
Really? That's funny. funny because it's the most un-Halloween song I ever recorded, I guess. It's such a... I think it was a part of the time when we recorded. It was 91 or 92, 3. And that was Extreme, really famous at that time. And I loved this kind of porno graffiti album and produced... Was it Mike Wagner, right? Yeah. And there was such a different metal time, you can say. You know, everything was more fresh, more guitar-oriented, and I like this kind of boogie style on that at that time, but not so much anymore. So I just catch the time, you know, with this song, Take Me Home, and it's nice that you love it so much. It's amazing. I even thought about not to have it on the album, to be honest.
Now, I want to talk about Rick Alty for a little bit because, you know, he has a completely different sounding voice than Andy Daris or Michael Kiske. And at the same time, what's crazy about this is that Andy Daris and Michael Kiske have a completely different sounding voice as well. So now you have Rick going in here to record songs from two singers he sounds nothing like. And the two singers that originally sang them sound nothing like each other. So it was kind of pretty funny that that is the way it happened. And maybe talk a bit, what was it like for Rick to go in and have to re-record these songs?
I think, for my taste, I think he sounds more closer to Andy Daris, of course, because Michael Kiske has a totally vocal technique. You can compare a little bit like these classics like, you know, Geoff Tate or young Bruce Dickinson and Rob Halford from the 70s. These kind of, so it's really a technique. You can sing very high and clean. And of course, the sound is totally different when you, and the songwriting would be different if you have a singer like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So later when Andy was singing in the band, I was getting more heavier, more... Yeah, like Time of the Oath or Mr. Ego, these kind of songs. And I think for Rick, it was much easier to sing these kind of songs. And The Dark Ride, I think he's pretty close, and Escalation, you know. He didn't try to copy him, but he told me he was impressed how high the stuff from Andy is. Because Andy has a more, how you call it, a more raspy voice, more rough. But his singing was sometimes much higher than Mikey Kiske, and people think Mikey Kiske is a high singing guy always. But he has just a clean voice, and in the higher mid range, it always sounds higher than it is in natural. You know, there are many or Rick can sing much higher than Mikey Kiske, but he sounds totally like a trash can. Then you know, like you know, but he sings really really high. I can't even get these notes. You know. But it's totally distorted. That's the difference. And Mikey can sing very clean high, and that's so impressive. That's a lot of fans, or especially these kind of fans, love so much on him. And I love it too on him, you know. So it's a great technique, and that's definitely not possible for Rick to copy that. You know, right. that we knew it from the beginning.
Now I want to talk about the band chemistry a bit because, you know, after Aeronautics, it seemed that you lost a little bit about that. I think Mark II, when you lost Uli and you lost Jorn, I think it was probably, in my opinion, my least favorite album that you put out. And then when Time to Be King came out, you at least got Jorn back, and there was a little bit of that chemistry back, but something didn't feel right about it. However, when Novum Initium came out and you got Rick in the band and you had some other musicians in there, it was like everybody got along really well. It was like, wow, this band is back. And I think Novum Initium is on par with the first two releases that you put out. And what changed between Time to Be King and Novum Initium? You know, talk about your band chemistry.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also really something important for me to, after Novum Initium, you know, we had a long writing break, you can say it, because we did the DVD, live DVD just, and this Punk Kings album last year. Now my head is free to write new songs, and you know, it's like a long time, but there was also like a lot of people talking too much after the release of Novum Initium, especially some smaller writer, internet magazines, or how you call it, you know, talking some stuff. And I was getting it too deep, you know, at that time. I said, oh, come on, this is so It was the same feeling when I did my first solo album, when I was singing on it, you know. And people said, oh, I'm surprised that you can sing so great. And then other people said, he shouldn't sing, he sucks, you know. And that's exactly what I don't like, you know. When you read from 10 people, like 7 say it's great, or 8, and 2 say I don't like it, it's crap. You know, then it really affects me. I don't like that stuff, you know.
Right.
It's like, so that is exactly what I said before. In the 70s, I respected every album from my idols, you know. There was always a reason why they did it, you know. When I just say Grand Funk Railroad, you know, they started as a trio band, later they had a keyboard player, then they were really melodic and had saxophone, and I love every album. Okay, you can say this is still my favorite era, you know, this kind of three-piece band, more rough, more heavy, but I try to understand why they did it, and I loved it, and I was really listening to each album a lot, and the same with Rainbow, the same with Deep Purple. But nowadays people just trying to find mistakes, or if you repeat yourself, you know, like AC/DC, fans want that everything sounds the same on AC/DC. When Masterplan is doing this, and they say, oh, it sounds like the first, or they try to copy the first two albums, you know, it's like, you can do what you want, it's always wrong, you know.
Right.
You can, there's no win situation anymore when you have a couple of albums out, especially when you have a great first one, and then they say, the first one is great, but the rest, I'm not sure, you know. I believe that now I try to sound arrogant, but that's how I see myself. So I think nearly every song I wrote, even including the bonus tracks, sounding mostly better than many, many average bands, which people put on the big kind of spot or heaven, you know, on the level, on the soil, which I think, why they're so famous? I think it's crap.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I see myself. And I think, why I have to work so hard and writing great songs and people just complaining and not even buying it or downloading it, you know. So that's kind of difficult, you know. And it was maybe easier when we did the first album, because we were hungry, we were like on fire to show something with a new lineup. But now I have a great lineup. I mean, we are really relaxed, and I hope we can make a great album without thinking about these people anymore. So that's what I want to do. And like you said, great. One of the album title of Grand Funk, you know. What is this album? It's Good Singing, Good Playing. So that's the album title. And Frank Zappa said, this is a great album title. You know, Mark Farner just said it to him. And that's what I want to do. Just great playing, great sound, just good chemistry, and emotional. It should be emotional. For me, music is always emotional. I'm sometimes really into these songs we wrote on Masterplan, which sometimes are not the heaviest or the fastest. But I'm just wondering why some fans doesn't get it, you know. They always want this power and fast and...
Right.
For me, it's more the fake kind of feeling metal, you know. There's no emotion for me, but that's maybe because I'm old school, I don't know. But I hope that we can still deliver this for the fans, and maybe some of the fans will understand it after 10, 20 years. Who knows? But that's what I want to do, you know. I don't want to fake something and try to be different. I want Roland Grappa style, chemistry, guitar playing, songwriting mixed with my colleagues together, and so that's the next album. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I got a couple more questions for you, Roland Grappa. You know, the next question is, what are some of your highlights of the last 20 years of your career? Like, I've met you 20 years ago. We've known each other a long time. Obviously, you've gone from Helloween to Masterplan now. And what are some of the highlights for you of your musical career over the last 20 years?
20 years is not so long ago. So I started a bit earlier with the guys, right? But 20 years is around, what is that? 98. So I think, right? 98. Yeah, so it's, there was still great times. Yeah. So we did, I think, Better Than Raw, and then after that, The Dark Ride, which was my favorite album from Helloween. And maybe not the private situation was good, but I'm really proud of that album, you know, something, I don't know, hard to say. So, and we had good touring, we had good times, and but this was a good end for me, you know. When I was out of the band, I was proud to be, let's say that the last album I did with them was really strong and powerful. And then I think I'm really proud of about Masterplan a lot, you know, because what we started was surprising the people, and we did something powerful, something unique. I think starting with a singer like Jorn was something really totally different than what people expected, and the chemistry and the combination was awesome. And I just realized that many fans copying us now. It's like funny that I don't say they're a copy of us, but the kind of you know they're fans, like lots of Black, you mm-hmm. know. When you see Ronnie Romero singing, and he's a big Jorn fan, he's a big Ronnie James Dio fan. It's the same like Jorn. So Jorn is Ronnie James Dio fan, and then Tony Hernando, the guitar player, is a big Masterplan fan, and they don't have the songwriting that's different, but they try to get this direction, and it's really nice to see that bands following us now, you know. So it's pretty cool, and now I'm even producing them and mixing them. That's the kind of, you see, it's coming back somehow. It's funny, you know.
Roland, do you have any last words for the fans that are going to be checking out this interview? And of course, it's always great to have you on my radio show, as we've done for so many years. And any last words for everybody?
Yeah, so I'm happy that you were listening, and I hope you felt my positive energy, like always, and still smiling. So it's like still have a lot of things to show, to do with Masterplan, mixing other bands, and hopefully touring more, and being quite busy. So hopefully you see us soon on tour, or maybe somewhere else. So have a good one.